Here we are in the Congressional Corner with Congressman Richie Neal. Richie Neal, of course, is my congressman in the 1st District of Massachusetts, and so many of us are so proud of you and what you've managed to do here, Richie. Let me talk to you about Senator Manchin's comments about not supporting a $3.5 trillion bill. Is this entire effort doomed?
No, it's not. And I hope that the president yesterday, as he met with Senator Manchin, had an opportunity to convince him of raising that number. But I thought that the interviews he did on Sunday on three major networks, for example, I think he drew the line in the sand. So if you're Chuck Schumer right now and you're Joe Biden, you're trying to figure out how to nudge Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema over the goal line. I'm not sure what came of the conversations yesterday. The president met with both of them. And at the same time, I think that we're readying the package that now has received, by and large, a favorable response on the tax side and on the other measures that we embraced in terms of social investment. So I think that the challenge that we have in the Senate is that there is no room for error. You need all 50 Democrats. You are not going to get any Republicans to vote for this. So all of a sudden, the scorecard is at best 50-50 with the vice president breaking the tie at the process of reconciliation. And I think that Senator Manchin is in a pretty strong negotiating position, but we're going to have to wait and see. Even though he has said he's for the measure, he just is debating the size of the measure.
Now, you may call me a cynic, but it seems to me there's a certain amount of gamesmanship that has to be played here.
You're absolutely right.
You want to talk about that?
You're absolutely right. I mean, I think that there's always messaging that has to take place. And I recall, as you noted in the earlier interview, when Johnson was selling the Civil Rights Act, which, by the way, in the end, the Republican leader in the Senate and in the House both voted for it, he went out of his way to placate them with domestic spending in their constituencies. But also, as Robert Caro has so eloquently pointed out, Johnson said to his staff about Everett Dirksen, whatever Ev wants, Ev gets. Got it? And I think that that has to be part of the strategy. I mean, it's, you know, generally you don't spend your time with people you don't need to on these votes. And if somebody's a predictable or safe vote, then all of a sudden you turn your attention for obvious and good reason to people that aren't safe votes. And I have a couple of members in my sights that I'm going to attempt to convince that they need to vote for the final package that the Speaker and I negotiate with the Senate and with the president. And Secretary Yellen's been terrific on this. I thought she was a superb appointee when President Biden nominated her. And she's in full command of Treasury and the negotiating process. So it is, as you've described it, it's never pretty to watch, but we intend to get there.
That's how the sausage is made. So,
that's right.
so we got a $3.5 trillion bill. President Biden was in the Senate for a long time. He knew that you put something out with a big price tag and then you take concessions. Do you think that's what's going on right now?
Well, I think that we came up with the revenue that he wants. And I would just say this with some humor, because I know that the listening audience will enjoy this. In talking to Speaker Pelosi, we were talking about the negotiations with the Senate and the White House. And, you know, we're never really, as you know, there is always some element of suspicion between the House and the Senate, even between the political parties in both sides. But it goes beyond it to more of an institutional network. But as I was speaking to Speaker Pelosi, we were going back and forth, and she said, well, I've been talking to the president a lot about this. And I said, just remember, Madam Speaker, he thinks like a senator.
So I take it your crystal ball is right in front of you. You've got a rag to sort of wipe it off with and make sure that it's. But the 3.5 is not realistic, is it?
I don't know. I think that I've been around for a long time, as I said to Klain at the White House, you know, when he was calling me to go back and forth on the deliberations. I said to him very clearly, I said, hey, let's be candid. I've done this for a long time. I said, it's 4 o'clock in the morning. We're in the room for the seventh or eighth straight night. I said, time to get creative.
And that creativity involves?
It involves us achieving our policy goals.
Right. So if the question is sticking to it and losing or making concessions and winning, you want to win.
I want to win. And I think that the speaker, to her credit, she has not curtailed some of the what-if parts of this. So I think that's very healthy.
I'm not sure I follow that, Richie.
Said when she's pressed by reporters on the financing of the initiative, she has been deliberately vague. How's that sound?
Sounds fine. How long do you think it's going to be before the proposal actually becomes law?
Well, there could be a strategic vote over the next couple of weeks that might map out where we are. And after that, I think that this can be nailed down over the next 3 or 4 weeks. I am optimistic because the country needs it. I mean, it's infrastructure is extraordinarily important. Let's be candid. The previous administration promised it regularly and didn't do anything about it. And subsequently, and I think fairly, the human side of it with the child credit, with the dependent care credit, with the earned income tax credit, with what we've done in the past with pensions and what we've done with retirement savings. I mean, I can't understand how anybody could be against these things. These are really important parts of a growing economy.
Well, I don't want to argue with you, but I have had a lot of trouble understanding how Donald Trump thinks about anything.
I'm dismayed because I think a lot of the people that voted for him, and look, that's up to them, but I think a lot of people in the Midwest, in Michigan and Ohio and Wisconsin, who voted for him, he kept promising infrastructure. And there are a lot of people that go to work in those industries, and they're well-paying jobs. You can raise a family and have some holidays and send your kids to college with those jobs, but he kept telling them he was going to do it, and he never did it.
Okay, now then that leads to the question of the focus on efforts in Congress to force fossil fuel companies to help pay for the infrastructure upgrades. Is that happening?
Yes, it is. And I also think that we do a really good job in the Ways and Means package that was reported out yesterday, dealing with the larger production of electric vehicles, the 10-year extension of the wind production tax credit or the investment tax credit. And that goes a long way. I mean, if you ask why we've had these notable achievements with renewables that are making much greater progress than anybody anticipated, a lot of it's because of the tax code. We have invested heavily in the renewable sphere.
Let me ask you about the details coming out about President Trump's actions after the election of 2020. How worried are you, as I am, about his running again? And winning.
Well, I'm not so much worried about immediacy of him running again as much as I am now where Republicans nationwide have embraced this idea about fraud in the polling place. There is no evidence to support it, but it's become almost part of a psychic effort to convince people that it's widespread fraud when they don't win. And I think that the pressure that has been put on, I noticed Pennsylvania legislature, they're going to begin to subpoena documents. And in California, the lead Republican who was defeated, he made the argument there could be voter fraud. So I think that what Trump did in the race with Hillary Clinton, he said the election's rigged when it looked as though he was going to lose. And then when he won, he only said it was rigged again when Biden won. So if you're a Democrat and you win, the election's rigged, apparently, according to the former president. I think it's very dangerous in democracy to make those arguments because I think it plays into the hands of the conspiracy theory people who are nutty enough to begin with.
A last question here. The state of voting rights in America. Now, I watched in California. Apparently, everybody in this recall election got a ballot in the mail. All they had to
do
was stick it in the mail. Now, that's got to be good for the Democrats, doesn't it?
It does.
The more. Yeah, please go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think, listen, I think expanding voter participation is extraordinarily healthy. And I think encouraging people to participate. We had in the last presidential election the largest turnout in terms of percentage since William McKinley's presidency. And I think that's good for democracy. I mean, there have been a lot of nights where I've been on a side that lost. And I might say, well, I wish they didn't vote in the same numbers. But at the same time, I think that expanding the franchise is a good thing for America.
And good for the Democrats, because there are
it's
more
good for
of
the
them.
Democrats, yeah. Yeah. Well, I think those demographic trends are clear. There's no doubt about that. The question is about turnout always.
Sure. And that's what happened here. Hey, Richie Neal, thank you so much. We're very flattered.
Thank you.
How,
great to be with you, Alan.
Busy you are. Thank you.
Thanks. All the best. Bye-bye.